The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
That's non-existent. Gangsters running the government, criminals running the newspapers, and a population of fools who think their job in life is to shop for garbage they don't need. Welcome to the encouraging, positive Savage Nation. Welcome to the Savage Nation, where a positive note will not be heard today because there's nothing positive to say. The fact of the matter is, we're all going to be, well, I'll stop right there because there's a lot of things I should say that I won't say because I don't want to say them. The atrocities in Bombay are on my mind. There is a war by radical Islam against our way of life. You know it. I know it. Yet you choose to put your head in the sand. The newspapers lie to you, talking only about how much money did you spend at the mall, how the oppressed gays in America are entitled to get married. But the fact of the matter is that India had its 9/11 last week, and we as conscious citizens have an obligation and a duty to discuss who did it and what must be done to the perpetrators. We cannot tolerate intolerance. In the mosques of London, money was raised to conduct these atrocities in Bombay. And yet the newspaper doesn't report that, does it? Your local rags won't report what papers in London are reporting. London Daily Mail: Mumbai terrorists were funded by cash raised in UK mosques. How could that be going on, you say? It's very simple. There is no leadership in the West. The low-life politicians are too concerned about appearing to be breaching international civil rights laws and how they're seen abroad, how they're seen on the Arab street. More concerned about that than they are about the safety of their own citizens, which is their only job, by the way. They have one job, the politicians, which is to protect us, and they're not doing it. There is a war raging against our civilization by the subhumans. These subhumans called radical Islamists. They are atrocious subhumans in that what they do, no one else on earth does. We will not survive as a nation. Western civilization cannot survive unless radical Muslim terrorists are rooted out and destroyed. And yet, let's go to the New York Times, the once great newspaper, the New York Times. New York Times' politically correct coverage of the Mumbai massacre by Don Fetter is worth reading. I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. He says this: in thousands of words of coverage, the New York Times never mentioned that victims' bodies frequently bore the marks of torture. One of the doctors who performed postmortems was quoted on the Indian news website, Radif.com, is saying, of all the bodies, the Israeli victims bore the maximum torture marks. And yet, in a series of six alleged news stories on the massacre in Bombay, the so-called New York Times refused to call the terrorists Muslims or Islamic extremists. They called them gunmen, terrorists, militants, and assailants, but never Muslims. Why was that? Why does the Times refuse to recognize a connection between Islam and worldwide terrorism? Why is it, even though most terrorist acts on the earth are committed by Muslims, even though almost all terrorist groups have names like Jihad this and Islamic that, and terrorists regularly quote the Quran's kill the infidels verses, you never see this in the newspapers. This constitutes a denial of reality. We are living in a parallel universe, those of us who know what is going on. Are you aware of the fact that when these subhumans went on their rampage, a Turkish couple told the subhumans that they were Muslims, and they were immediately released? Are you aware of that? This was not indiscriminate shooting. The subhumans were told to kill foreigners, Americans, Brits, and Jews. It was not indiscriminate. The subhumans were told to target foreigners, that is, anyone except a Muslim. Why is there a media blackout of the Bombay attack today? Tell me why. Can anyone explain it? Now, I'm trying to be positive here. I've put a link up to the fund for the surviving baby of the slaughtered rabbi and his wife. And there's a link to the child's survival fund over in Brooklyn. It's on michaelsavage.com. Send the money if you want. It goes right to him. The child who survived, I will repeat, the two-year-old who survived was covered with his mother's blood. The child who survived, the Jewish child, was not permitted to live by the subhuman Muslims who killed and tortured his parents in front of his eyes. According to the Savage Information Tree, the little child survived because his mother held him in her arms, and as she died, she nestled the baby in her arms. And when the subhumans left, the baby wriggled his way free from under his mother and was then seen with blood all over himself in the hallway. They didn't let the child live, as the vermin in the media are implying. The low-life, useless vermin called journalists in America are not telling you that they tortured the parents, that they killed the women in front of the men first, possibly raped them. None of this is coming out. It's not coming out because the media is useless in America. The politicians are worth less than the media. So all we have left is the truth. However we have to find it, we will find it. And we will disseminate it through the Savage Nation. There are many things I have to say about the devils in Mumbai, but there is a miracle in Bombay. And the miracle is the little boy who survived the subhumans, the devils, who came and slaughtered so many innocent people, including his parents, his innocent parents. It's a miracle on the order of Moses in the bulrushes. And it's a story that I told last Friday when many of you were on vacation. But I will tell the story again. In fact, I've been deluged with requests to replay my monologue from Friday on this program today, which I will do at some point in this hour. I have a question for you. What kind of human being would do what these people did? Remember, they didn't attack military targets. They attacked men, women, children. They tortured them. What kind of human being learns this? Where do they learn it? Are they learning it in certain mosques? Do we have mosques like that in America? If we do, why are they permitted to exist? Why are these mosques not closed down? These are questions that must be asked. We must demand that our government protect us from the subhumans amongst us. Of a number, by the way, quite a high number, exist in this country waiting for their orders to be triggered to go off like human time bombs. You know it and I know it. The government has told us this. Yet nobody in the media will talk about the human time bombs, the subhumans who have been brainwashed to kill you, slaughter you in your own home. I was watching a military history show last night, even though I stopped watching it. I watched it again. I stopped watching it because I cannot stomach the glorification of military weaponry that we won't use. I have no taste anymore for the U.S. military when we have cowards running the military who will not fire a shot. We have the most powerful Navy in the world who will not even launch a 22 caliber bullet at a rubber boat that is being run by a pirate. We have worthless men running every avenue of the military at the top level. Make it very clear in your head. We have brave men ready to fire, but we have total inept cowards at the top of the chain of command. Why is it that our military will not fire a shot at pirate ships, which continue to grab ships? Can you explain that to me? And so as I watched the naval battle of Leyte Gulf from World War II last night on military history, this was right after Pearl Harbor. And the U.S. people and the U.S. military were demoralized after Pearl Harbor. They were caught with their pants down. We lost all of our battleships and cruisers. Luckily, the aircraft carriers were out at sea and training. And the American people, as I say, were demoralized. The American military was demoralized. And after a few enemy ships were sunk and some payback was done to the Japanese who had bombed us at Pearl Harbor, a huge relief went up across America. The people's morale went up. The military's morale went up because they looked for vengeance. FDR, the commander-in-chief, sought revenge for what was done at Pearl Harbor. Where is the revenge in Bombay? Why is the Indian government impotent to act? Why is the U.S. government impotent to act? Why is the British government impotent to act? Why is the Israeli government impotent to act? Why is Waziristan not obliterated from the earth? And make no mistake about it, they know where these animals were trained. They know exactly where these subhumans are getting their indoctrination. Take a look at it, the mountainous region of northwest Pakistan, the tribal areas. It's an old and well-known area. The tribal raids into British-ruled territory was a constant problem for the British, eliciting frequent punitive expeditions on this area by the British between 1860 and 1945. The Wazir tribes became part of Pakistan in 1947. The fact of the matter is, the Islamic militants in Waziristan have close affiliations with the Taliban. We know that Waziristan is often mentioned as a haven for al-Qaeda fighters. We also know that Pakistan received about $4 billion from the United States for the logistical support it provided for the counterterrorism operations from 02 to 06 and for its own military operations, and yet they did nothing with it but steal the money. We know the Bush administration sends billions of dollars to the bums of Pakistan who will not use it against the tribes of Waziristan. And so I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, here is the question of the day. Why is there no revenge? Should Waziristan be obliterated from the face of the earth? I'll be right back. Savage. You think we don't have men who know what to do to them? You think we don't have men who are equal to them in barbarism and thuggery? You're mistaken. Some of them are in the military. Some of them are in Pelican Bay. That is correct. That's a long story that I will tell another day, but I've noticed something in this society. Naturally, we lock up the most violent, but it's interesting to me that some of the most violent are not actually insane nor indiscriminate. Some of them actually are descendants of the warrior class of the United States of America. Only we have become so intimidated by actual masculinity that any sign outside of the ring of anger, of rage, of honor, of dignity is immediately suspect. And if it goes over the line, it is immediately arrested and incarcerated, which is why the subhumans can unleash an attack as they did in Bombay. 10 subhumans, they say, did all of this in Bombay. 10 subhumans did it? Where did they get their training? Where did they raise their money? Well, according to the London newspapers, the money was raised in mosques, a few mosques in London. Now, you ask yourself, how could the British permit them to raise the money in London? How is that possible? Well, the answer is, the matter is that governments in the UK, as in many European nations and in Australia, are permitting Muslim migrants to create their own enclaves and ghettos and preach their own interpretations of their religion. They do not adapt to the cultures of their host nations. They have contempt for the laws of the society of their host country, and they are aided by powerful civil rights lobbying groups of the kind that has targeted me. They have squadrons of verminous lawyers, and such And as a result, Islamists are waging a successful war in Europe, in England, and in the United States of America. They are forcing women to wear traditional Islamic garb in order to separate them from the society. They are urging the introduction of so-called Sharia law into local courts. Ladies and gentlemen, unless we understand our enemy, unless we understand that our politicians are worthless, the West is lost. Let's begin with the callers on the Savage Nation. We'll start in New York on WOR. Stewart, welcome to the Savage Nation. What do you think?
Yeah, Mike, every point you make is correct and simply confirms that the West is lost. It's over. Why don't we just acknowledge that?
Well, I don't believe it's over. I believe it's not over. I believe that after we have a few suitcase nukes go off in America or something along those lines, the people will rise up and throw the politicians in prison where they belong. The people will protect themselves from the politicians who are imprisoning them, not only robbing them blind with bailouts for their friends on Wall Street and in businesses that they know, and giving the people nothing. They're robbing us blind. This is leadership? What Bush and Paulson are doing is leadership? It's criminality.
But
the
Mike,
Crips and the Bloods are less dangerous than they are.
Do nothing, Mike. The people are told to go shopping.
Well, the people are told to go shopping. And when do the people stop shopping?
They won't stop shopping. The people will not rise up. The politicians are worthless. What evidence can you show us that anything will change, Mike? It just gets worse and worse. They killed 3,000 people. That wasn't enough?
Yeah. Well, as a result, we got a pacifist called Obama as president. But as you could see, even he doesn't have the absolute power the left thought he had. Here we see an actually more conservative National Security Council than Bush has. Have you noticed that?
Where's Obama in all this?
No, have you noticed that there's actually a more conservative war council coming in under Obama than under Bush? Have you noticed that Bush is more liberal than Obama when it comes to national security? Have you figured that out yet?
Mike, we got Hillary.
There's an old guard in this country, in the CIA and the FBI, who knows what's going on. They know what's going on. They know the danger we're in. They know that the sub-morons and the subhumans are here.
Savage.
Government has one job. A government's main job is to protect the people. They filch us of our hard-earned money with taxes, and we give it up, assuming they're going to protect us. Their job is to protect us, not to rob us, not to fleece us. Here we have a criminal governor named Schwarzenegger, a complete fraud from top to bottom, disguised himself as a Republican to get the sheeple to vote for him. I was never impressed with his movies. I was never impressed with him as a politician from day one, as you know. I was never fooled by him. The fact of the matter is today Schwarzenegger in California says that there's a fiscal emergency in California. For years I've been saying, well, you want to start curing that fiscal emergency in California, start by closing the emergency rooms to illegal aliens. That's $15 billion a year by every study I have read. Put a CHP officer in every emergency room. I'm sorry, we don't have the money. Go back where you came from. We can't afford to give everybody a gold-plated medical treatment. I have been in the emergency room 3 times this year. Next to me were entire families from Central America for one brat with a runny nose. And they had translators. And they took care of everybody's health needs. You think it's free? It isn't free. That's one of the main reasons California has gone bankrupt. But as California has gone, so has the rest of the nation. They won't say a word to the illegal alien, primarily the Hispanic illegal alien, who is violating all of the rules of the game. They're getting free medication, free education. It is bankrupting our states. So you have a problem? Start by cracking down on the illegal aliens. Now let's go from the fiscal all the way to the military. Why has India not struck back at any target whatsoever, whether it be in Waziristan or elsewhere. India has a very powerful military. India has an air force, the last I checked. They know that these subhumans were trained and came out of Waziristan. And if it wasn't them, so it'll be the next band coming out of the region called Waziristan, the self-declared part of FATA, the federally administered tribal areas in the northwest frontier of the region. Why will they not strike? Why is India impotent? Tell me why. Why has the United States done nothing? Why did we fail India? Why did our CIA fail India? And make no mistake about it, our CIA failed India. What about the revered Mossad, our great Mossad, criticized the poor Indians? At least the Indian, the leader of the anti-terrorism squad, he tried the best he could and he got killed doing it. I don't like that the Israelis stand on the sidelines saying they were amateurs and didn't do it right. Foul ball, Israel. You didn't do such a great job yourself. All you did was hide in your bunkers and let the U.S. take care of your women and children. I don't want to hear any more about Israel's daunted Secret Service, Israel's Mossad, Israel's commandos. I'm sick of it all. They haven't fired a shot in so long, they don't know how to even aim a rifle in Israel. Yet they have the nerve to sit there telling India they didn't do it right. So we the people have a right and an obligation to discuss this. The media blackout of the Bombay attack is disgusting. No more pictures, no more firsthand accounts, no more body counts. The American media has moved on to fawning over a man who isn't even president yet, to fawning over Hillary Clinton, to how many people went shopping over the weekend, to which movie came out on top at the box office. After all, we wouldn't want to spend too much time on who the terrorists actually were. We wouldn't want to say anything negative about somebody's religion. After all, the attackers might have been Catholic nuns, for all we know, according to your local newspaper. They could have been Hindu nationalists, according to your local newspaper. And, as the American media is more than willing to tell you, why, we had Timothy McVeigh, and he was a Christian. They're avoiding the topic. But the topic cannot be avoided. Not if we're going to survive as a nation. Not if Western civilization is going to survive at all. We know who these people were. They were radical Muslim terrorists. We know where they came from. They came from Pakistan. We know who funded them. Radical mosques in the UK, which means ordinary citizens in the United Kingdom who hate white people. Radical mosques that were allowed to flourish because British liberals wanted to be perceived as sensitive, as caring, and as multicultural. I will go on to the callers on the Savage Nation. I will ask you again, is it time to carpet bomb the tribal regions of Pakistan? Carpet bomb Waziristan is the question. How come we haven't found leaders able to find the guts or the brains to do it? Ever since we invaded Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden and his Taliban cohorts, we have given billions and billions of dollars to the Pakistani government to fight terrorism. We've tried negotiating with the so-called tribal leaders. Our government has tried winning hearts and minds. Our government has tried letting the Pakistan army do the job for us. Our government has even tried sending the CIA in under covert operations. I believe the time is over for covert operations. What America needs right now are overt operations. I can hear the liberals saying, but Michael, if we carpet bomb Waziristan, won't that pose a humanitarian crisis? Won't we be killing innocent civilians? What these liberal fools fail to realize is that Waziristan is an extremely sparsely populated area. The terrorists are practically the only people who live there. We've already sent limited bombing missions to Waziristan in a half-hearted attempt to root out the Taliban. All we need to do is take the next step. But the next step doesn't seem to be on the table for Barack Hussein Obama and his new foreign policy team. Hillary Clinton is already talking about reaching out and making new allies in order to win the war on terror. This is a totally appeasing, weak approach. It will have weak results. It's been tried through history. The enemy acknowledges only one thing, force and power. We need real military men backed by substantial force, and that is the only thing that the throwbacks in Waziristan will understand. The world will be a better place for the loss of a few medieval throwbacks. That's my opinion. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Salt Lake City, Justin, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Dr. Savage, great to talk to you. I just want to make a quick comment about the attacks in India. And my opinion is this, is we, like you said, we know where they came from. How come the U.S. hasn't gone and done anything about it? Right now, the terrorists are sitting around a campfire laughing at us because 10 of them...
Well, you're just asking a question that I've already answered, so I'd rather not have calls like that. That's not your fault. It's my screener's fault. I'd rather have callers who have something new to add. The worst talk radio is when a caller repeats what you just said as though he didn't hear a word you just said. What do I need it for? I don't need the junior high school version of the graduate school exposition. I've said it already. What do you want me to do? Am I the only one in America who's angry right now? You know, I couldn't sleep over the weekend. I was waking up 2, 3 o'clock in the morning imagining the people being tortured to death by the sub-morons and the subhumans. I try to ask myself, where did they learn to tie people up and torture them in front of their husbands before killing the women? Who taught them that? Who put the hatred into their head? Who taught this to them? Who taught this to these Pakistanis? Who put this in their head? Where did they learn to do this to people? Who taught it to them? And I wanted to know who's teaching it to their cohorts here in America and why they're allowed to get away with it. Why am I the only one in the media who is saying this? If you'd like me to stop, I will talk about shopping. If you'd like me to stop, I'll talk about movies. If you'd like me to stop, I'll talk about my dog. If you'd like me to stop, I'll talk about the holidays. If you'd like me to stop, I'll talk about Jingle Bells. Would you like to move on? Does it make you a little uncomfortable to talk about the 9/11 in India and what it has to do with you? It has everything to do with you. But there's been no revenge. There's been no reaction. So let me go back again to World War II. World War II, Japanese attack us at Pearl Harbor. 3,000 American servicemen are killed, went down with their ships. The American people are demoralized. The American military, particularly the U.S. Navy, demoralized. They are sent out on a hunting mission and told to seek revenge. They catch a few Japanese freighters in the area of Leyte Gulf. And they sink an oil tanker coming out of the mouth of the harbor of the lagoon, trapping the ships in there. And then they go on a turkey shoot, and they sink quite a few, I think it was 80, ships that were carrying material, war material for the Japanese. The news electrifies America. The U.S. Navy is electrified. The men cheer on the ships as their torpedo bombers come back. They are seen for what they are. They are seen as heroes. What happened to this country that we have MBAs who are leading the Navy, MBAs who are leading the Army, MBAs who are picked, handpicked by George Bush, who are unable to fire so much as a .45 caliber revolver at an oncoming terrorist rubber boat? What happened to this country? We have to lead the leaders. You remember the statement? When the leaders won't lead, the people must lead. When the leaders won't lead the people must lead the leaders. For God's sakes, if everyone listening to this show spoke out, everywhere you are, all the time, not stopping, saying, I want revenge. I want them to suffer. I want them to understand we're not a weak nation. Maybe it would trickle up to the gangsters who are running the country. Chicago, Tim, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, how you doing? This is completely just incredible that the American media is so compromised. I think they can't even talk about the simple issues concerning the terrorists. They're sitting there on their Blackberries checking UK news.
All right, thanks for the call. I don't understand what kind of callers I'm getting today. Who's doing the call screening? I'm sure he's a reasonable man. I said the same thing in better ways, and I'm not criticizing the man. I'm the talk show host, so it's my job to articulate what is going on. If the caller has something to add to it, you put him on. If he says the same thing in broken words or in incomplete sentences, you don't put him on. Don't you understand that? I don't know who's sitting in today at the call screening, but okay, maybe we'll get rolling in a while. 1-800-449-8255, Austin, Texas. Raj, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. I just had an answer to your question. Why Indian government did not retaliate to the Bombay incident? According to me, it's a history that's been repeating from last 50 years since the division happened between India and Pakistan. And this incident may be highlighted and hyped a lot, but trust me, 5 years back, we had similar instances where thousands of people were slaughtered, but nothing came out. And this is something that won't stop because we have the enemy within. A classic example, I would say, is the Kargil War that India and Pakistan had, where Pakistan kind of overtook some of the Indian territories. We had so many soldiers who dedicated their life and fought their life for, which was given mm-hmm. back to Pakistan with no cost.
Mm-hmm. Well, why is it that India is not reacting? They know where the terrorists were trained. In fact, their BlackBerries and their phone messages were traced back to Pakistan. That certainly was discovered over the weekend.
Yes, and there are evidence that it is Pakistan. But since they are the neighboring country, plus we have so many Muslim population in India, it's tough even to have war with them. And even
no, it isn't tough. What is this about Muslims? There are 1 billion Christians on the planet. What's this sitting and cowering every time you say the word Muslim? Everyone whispers. What are they, supermen? They're not supermen. They bleed also, for God's sakes.
I do.
Everyone says Muslim. They hush up. If we let this go on, they win. They take over the world, the radical Islamists. End of story. The attacks in Bombay, according to all evidence, were carried out by Hindi-speaking, homegrown Islamists with possible links to elements within the Pakistani intelligence community. And this is all based upon the Kashmir issue. Now, what is the Kashmir issue? The Kashmir issue is about jealousy, plain and simple. Why is it that India has gone from a relatively poor third world nation, and it still is in most parts, to a beacon of the world with regard to affluence? How is it that the Hindus, have risen so far so fast, while their neighbors in Pakistan remain enmeshed in hatred, in jealousy, and prejudice? How is that possible? What is it about the culture of Pakistan that keeps the people imprisoned? What is it about the culture of India that has liberated the people of India? And if you don't know the answer to that, then perhaps you ought to study comparative religion. What is it about the Hindu religion that permits the people to rise and become a beacon to the world? And what is it about the Muslim religion that apparently imprisons the people of Pakistan? Now, I keep hearing about Islamism and Islamists and radical Islam, and we all have to dance around the obvious. But there's another pregnant question, which is, what is it about Islam itself that may be responsible for this jealousy and this type of learning that occurs, albeit in a minority of mosques, but nevertheless still occurs? Why does it occur in a minority of mosques? Why does the dominant Muslim population permit this to occur in a minority of mosques? Why doesn't the majority Muslim population in Pakistan, in India, in Britain, in Europe, and in the U.S. root out the radical Islamists? That's where the tension lies between the so-called moderate Muslims and the radical Muslims. Why have we heard nothing from the American pressure groups like CARE about the attacks in Bombay? Why have they not said a word? I'll be right back.
Savage.
So the only surviving subhuman, who was a big, brave man when he had grenades and machine guns and everyone else was unarmed and was begging to be left to live, the only surviving Muslim gunman told police he is Pakistani and he trained at a Lashkar camp in Pakistan. This is coming to you from Indian security officials. Indian leaders are also blaming elements within Pakistan for the strikes. Now, the Pakistani government in Islamabad acknowledges the attackers may be Pakistani or may even have trained on its soil, but insists they did so without its knowledge. I believe them. But that doesn't solve the problem. Government leaders in Pakistan have also keep repeating that they too are fighting a bloody war against Islamic militants. I agree with them. But apparently they're losing the war against Islamic militants. So the question is, why do they not ratchet up the war against Islamic militants? In other words, if the Islamabad government agrees with the Indian government that they came out of the Islamic militant areas, then why don't the two countries join forces and once and for all go in there and wipe them off the planet? See, that's the question of the day. There's no muddling of the question. The real confusion here is whether the Pakistani government really means what it says. You know, the fact of the matter is also that hundreds of Pakistani soldiers, Muslims themselves, have died in suicide bombings since the mosque assault. And that was the July 07 assault on the Red Mosque in Islamabad, which killed scores of militants. And the reason the Pakistani military did that was because this mosque was historically used as a jumping off point for militants en route to fight to the fight in Kashmir. So the Pakistani government attacked the Red Mosque. And since that time, hundreds of Pakistani soldiers have died in suicide bombings against Pakistan's military. Okay. Then it says a Pakistani army operation in the Bajo border region that began in September has also targeted militant hideouts. So they are trying to do it. The question I am raising is, how come if the Pakistani government is already at war with the tribal elements, why don't they join forces with the United States Special Forces and Indian Special Forces and the U.S. Air Force, take whatever they need, go in there and wipe the region off the planet? What is this hand-to-hand, door-to-door nonsense? If we had taken the same delicate approach in World War II, you would be speaking German or you would be a lampshade. Let me repeat that. We had men in World War II who understood what total war was. They understood that it was them or us. Either they die or we die. And they understood that it would rather that they died than we die. But today we do not have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. We have a government of the lobbyists, by the lobbyists, and for the lobbyists. God only knows how many of our politicians have been paid off with funds from Saudi Arabia or Pakistan or God knows where in order to lobby against the military assault with Pakistan, with India, against the tribal regions. Nothing else explains why they do not go in and get the job done once and for all. You can read all of these stories on michaelsavage.com. My book, Psychological Nudity, is on a special program. I suggest you pick up a copy at my website today. And I will be back momentarily to pick up the baton and run with it right here in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We are focused only on one story today, which is the war against civilization by radical Islam. This is a war waged in the name of Islam against America, Britain, Hindus, Jews, Buddhists, atheists, anyone who refuses to submit to Islamic conquest. The atrocities in Bombay have told a very clear lesson to anybody with the brains to listen. Now, I've covered it since last Wednesday. I've collected, I think, the best stories from around the world and put them up on michaelsavage.com. I recognize that the American media has become virtually worthless, that they have blacked out the Bombay attack and they're covering it up. But here's a story that just came to us from BBC News minutes ago that is a very positive story. Muslims refuse to bury militants. This is an amazing story. Indian Muslims say they do not want the gunmen killed by the security forces during the attacks in Bombay to be buried in Muslim graveyards. I want to repeat that. Not Hindus saying Muslims shouldn't be buried, but Muslims themselves saying they do not want their burial grounds polluted by these vermin. That's my editorial. Community leaders believe the militants cannot be called Muslims because they went against the teachings of Islam and killed innocent civilians. One Muslim leader said the militants had defamed the religion. Nine vermin, nine subhumans died, as you know, when they killed indiscriminately, that is, killed anyone who was not a Muslim in India's financial capital, killing at least 172 people, but it's probably much higher. My guess is the government suppressing the actual figures. But this is being called the first openly defiant act against Islamic terrorism. Muslims in India themselves have said they will not allow the radical Islamists to be buried in a Muslim graveyard anywhere in the country. They said that they could not believe that the assailants, who they said had killed innocent civilians unprovoked, were true followers of Islam. They said they could not be. They said these terrorists are a black spot in our religion. We will sternly protest the burial of these terrorists in our cemetery. This is from Muslims. This is actually a very positive sign, more positive than coming from our community here in America, where the so-called mainstream Muslim groups have not condemned the attack, so far as I know. If I am mistaken, then send me what they've said. Ibrahim Tai, the president of the Indian Muslim Council, which looks after the social and religious affairs of the Muslim community in India, said that they had defamed his religion. He said they are not Muslims as they have not followed our religion, which teaches us to live in peace. He then went on to say, if the government does not respect our demands, we will take up extreme steps. We do not want the bodies of people who have committed an act of terrorism to be buried in our cemeteries. These are Muslims. So maybe there's hope out of all of this. He goes on. He said, these terrorists are a black spot in our religion. We will very sternly protest the burial of these terrorists in our cemetery. Other Muslim groups have written to their local assembly reps to say that if the authorities force the militants to be buried in a Muslim graveyard, they too will come out on the streets and protest. One Muslim housewife said, we Muslims do not even kill an ant. Our religion does not teach all this. We are against all these terrorists, and I completely agree with the Muslim council's argument. However, Nasim Ahmed, a Muslim worker in the city, said the council was wrong. He said, quote, they are Muslims, and they can be buried even if they have done something wrong. Our religion does not say that those who have done evil can't be buried in a cemetery, said this wonderful prize of a human being. As you know, the radical Islamist sub-morons, subhumans, tortured many of them for over 60 hours before they were killed by commandos. Muslims refuse to bury militants. Lead story of the Savage Nation. I'll take your calls at 1-800-449-8255. That is the phone number. Marsha on WOR in New York. Go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Michael, thank you for telling the truth. I turned the radio on.
Speak up. Could you speak up, Marsha? We can't hear you. Come on, louder.
Thank you for telling us the truth, because I turned the television and the radio off today because I heard nothing but BS.
And there's nothing I could say about it. We know that there's a media blackout. We know that the people in the media want you to forget what happened in Bombay, but we must not forget what happened in Bombay, because it's going to happen here. The American people must demand more of their government than we are demanding right now. Take a look at Paulson robbing the country blind, writing checks for billions of dollars and not going to prison. He has stolen more money than, as far as I know, all of the organized criminals in the last 10 years. Did you hear what I said? Hank Paulson has stolen more money than all of the organized crime families over the last 10 years has been stolen by this man called Hank Paulson. Yet he gets away with it because of the complicity of the media. Do you understand that?
I do, Michael, and I'll tell you. Remember last week when you said, where is Bush and where is Barack? Well, they finally came on, and what did they say? Nothing.
Well, they're calling it the era of the co-presidency. That Bush has basically passed his administration over to Obama, and that Obama has assumed a larger role than any president in the last 75 years, taking the reins from the sad sack, George Bush. Thanks for the call. Florida, Ryan, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Savage, for being a patriot of this country. There's very there's a lot of us left that don't think there's not. And
I know it. I know there are, but we're all suppressed by our government and media. I understand that very well.
And I want to say, you're not being negative. You're bringing the truth, and that's what America doesn't want to hear, never wants to hear the truth, and it upsets me, and it gets me so frustrated, and I'm a patriot of this country first, and I will always...
This country is screaming for revenge. It has been screaming for revenge for years. Now, it is true that Bush was on the right track when he went into Iraq and Afghanistan, and it is true that George Bush has made certain that we have not been attacked since 9/11. One after another of radical Islamic cells have been broken up in this country. I can name five of them. So let's not say that the government has not done its job at all. The problem is, for the American people, it's kept in the background and it's made invisible. That's the problem. We need a visceral record of revenge against these people. And we know where they're training. We know where they're coming from. There is no reason that Pakistan and India shouldn't join forces and wipe Waziristan off the planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. God bless.
And the world would cheer. The world would cheer. And let all of those who complain, complain all they wish. It's a free world and a free country. Let them cheer all they wish. But I am questioning why India does not join with Pakistan, who has been at war with these radical Islamists, and wipe Waziristan off the planet. I'd like to know why. Especially since it is alleged that Osama bin Laden is in hiding in that region. What is the resistance to this? I didn't say go in pell-mell, categorically, unilaterally, and do it. If Pakistan's government itself is saying, we oppose this, we didn't do it, we know nothing about it, we've been fighting them ourselves, then for God's sakes, why doesn't India and Pakistan join together with some U.S. special forces, go into that area and wipe it off the planet, pave it over if need be? Thanks for the call. I'm asking a question. Why is India not fighting back? Well, I have an answer for all of this, which is we are so advanced as a civilization that we have become vulnerable to disappearing from the planet. And the throwbacks, when you see them going in and indiscriminately firing into crowds, tying up the Jews, torturing the women and raping them in front of the men, etc., and doing it with glee and laughing and getting away with it. And then when the one who was caught is caught, screams like a little baby and says, don't kill me. Remember, he wasn't a suicide bomber. He was a brainwashed psychopath who was a coward at base, who begged for his life. And the fact of the matter is, he was brainwashed into thinking that the people who he was killing were not even humans. He was probably told that they're not worthy of life, that Allah doesn't recognize them as people because of the way they live. They're not worthy of respect. I don't know what was put into his head. I could write the script if I was a novelist. But since I'm not a novelist, I will not be able to do that for you extemporaneously on The Savage Nation. I think you can fill it in yourself of what went into this, the brains of these psychopaths before they went on this killing spree, this torture spree. But think about it. What they actually did in killing people en masse in a city like this has been done through the ages. Indiscriminate slaughter of the enemy. Attila the Hun, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Pol Pot. We could name many. There have been many such cases where humans lose their humanity and will kill indiscriminately. Now, the question is, what happens to a civilization such as ours when it loses the ability to unleash those amongst us who still have the guts to kill, but constrain themselves and will only do so to protect the sheep? I want to explain that in a little more detail. The police, the military, and I'm talking about the most hardened amongst them, have the capacity to be wolves, the good ones. The good ones have the capacity to be hunters of humans themselves. They have the capacity to kill with almost no conscience, the way the enemy does. And the only difference is that they constrain themselves to protect the sheep amongst us from the wolves who would kill us. And so therefore they are our shepherds. They are our sheepdogs. The question is, who controls the sheepdogs? Well, if you look at San Francisco, we have a police chief who's about 4'9". Who has not fired a gun in 2 years, who they cannot find a hat to fit her head. That's who controls the sheepdogs in San Francisco, which is why we have a homicide epidemic that is out of control. It is not that there aren't cops who don't know where to go to find the gangbangers and don't have the guts to go out and kill them if need be. They could round them up and they could slaughter them if they wanted to without even thinking about it. And since that's not allowed, they could at least go out and round up the gangbangers, beat their heads in, and throw them into a dark cell and deport them. That's no question they could do that. There's plenty of guys in the city in the police force who are ready, willing, and able to do it. But the problem is the sheepdogs are being constrained by the perverts and the weaklings. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The first rule of aggression, as you well know, is to take the war to the enemy, number one. If we're going to sit here waiting to be attacked again, we will be attacked again and again and again. Some of the attacks will be small. Some of them will be medium. But if we don't go to the heartland of the enemy, where they are being trained, and don't tell me we don't know. We do know. Everybody knows where it's coming from now. Even Pakistan says it's coming out of the Waziristan region. They've been fighting them for years. We've been sending billions to Pakistan, and they're not doing the job because they're lying to us. So if we know where the training camps are, and we have satellites that fly in the sky that could literally see a mouse walking on the sand, we could probably see the terrorists as they're firing AK-47s in training. We could probably see the camouflage tents. We know where they are. We could launch a strike off any one of our submarines. We could launch a strike off any one of our land-based enclosures and wipe these areas off the map. But they don't do it. So you have to ask yourself why. Is it in the interest of the government to keep the people scared? Does the government actually like low-grade terrorist attacks against a frightened population in order to have the people cowed and frightened so they can continue to rob us as they're doing with the Wall Street bailouts? I don't know the answer to that. I don't have an answer to the question. I can only ask the question. And, of course, all we can do is ask questions. I have some answers, but apparently they're of no interest nor of any value. If I said make Iraq pay for the liberation, their liberation, we have spent nearly $1 trillion liberating these ingrates. They have oil. We're broke. Pay us back $800 billion or $1 trillion in oil. They won't do it. Instead, they say we want the price of oil to go up. The bloated pigs in the Iraqi oil ministry say that they want $80 a barrel oil. You hear this? These are people who many of you have sons who have been maimed or died to liberate. So ask yourself, why doesn't our so-called government demand that the Iraqis make reparations to us for having liberated them from Saddam? They have oil. We're bankrupt. We need oil. We need money. Pay us back now. That's all there is to it. And don't ask them. Just take it. Ask yourself why the government won't do that. Well, it's a complicated riddle, but the answer is the five sister oil companies run the world. And they put George Bush in power as an oil president. The left was 100% right about that. But many of you think that Obama represents a change, and you were shocked to find out that his cabinet, with regard to national security, is actually more conservative than that of George Bush. That you don't understand either, but you'll soon come to understand what happened very soon. Now let's play what George Bush had to say today after the attacks in Bombay with Clip 6.
Today is World AIDS Day, a day we reaffirm our commitment to fight HIV/AIDS at home and abroad. 33 million people around the world are living with HIV.
Let's stop right here. You get it? World AIDS Day. That's George Bush's work today. Not World Anti-Terrorism Day. Nothing about the Bombay Massacre. No, World AIDS Day again. People are asking, is AIDS overplayed? Is it the most overplayed disease in the world? Is too much money going to AIDS at the expense of other diseases? People are starting to ask that question. They are standing up again to the AIDS mafia. As you well know, there's billions and billions of dollars in this world being spent, much of it going for parties. If you think that the private jets from the auto manufacturers and the parties and is bad, you're right. But don't confuse yourself for 1 minute. If you actually looked at how the AIDS money is spent, your hair would stand up. You think it actually goes for medication for the people who are sick or for research? You're out of your mind if you think it does. Much of it goes for trips and for parties and for meet and greets and, meetings and here, meetings there. And people are saying enough is enough. We don't have the money for it anymore. But Bush has given $50 billion for AIDS. So he has the money. He can write a check for that, too. And he should bring in more. He should bring in 270,000 HIV patients a day into America because we are the most generous people on earth. We should bring in 270,000 AIDS patients from Africa every day in order to make George Bush a great man.
Savage.
Hundreds and hundreds of people were killed. We still don't know the numbers. I'm sure the Indian government is suppressing the actual number because the people are near riot in India right now. The difference between India and America is that the Indian security chief resigned over the attacks, whereas in America, if an attack occurred, the head of the Homeland Security Department would actually get a raise and become Secretary of the Treasury. In other words, if they could do such a good job in permitting a terror attack, you can imagine what they'd do in permitting even a greater ransacking of the Treasury, so they would go right up to the top. But in London, actually in Israel now, the orphan of the slain rabbi, there's a picture of him. And if you really want to get sad, I don't know what to tell you, go to michaelsavage.com. It's in the London Daily Mail. Little Moshe Holzberg, who I call the story a miracle in Mumbai, is crying for his mother. He was crying, "Mommy, mommy, mommy." He was found wandering with her blood all over his body, and that's a story that they refuse to tell you. They want you to believe that the radical Islamist murderers let him live, but that's not what happened. And I want you to listen to my opening to the Friday show, which many people heard, some heard parts of it, and they asked me to replay. It's only a few minutes. It was very emotional. Please listen. Americans, rise. Put your hand over your heart. We have no leadership. We are the country. America, arise. America, stop your cars. America, stop your cars and rise. We are America, not the empty skirts running this country who are nowhere to be found when we need them. Not Bush, not Obama, nobody. There is no American leadership. There is only American people. God bless America. The leadership of this country has abdicated. Abdicated, Mr. Bush. There is no president. There is only the people. Stand up and be counted, America. Show the leaders that you are America. I want to focus on the positive right now on the Savage Nation. I've come away from my vacation to be with you today on the Savage Nation because I, like you, if you are a conscious human being, have had my eyes glued on this unfolding tragedy. And within this folding tragedy, there is an unfolding miracle. There are many miracles that have unfolded inside this tragedy, but I see only one at this time because I'm only a person. I'm not God. The miracle that I see within this tragedy is the miracle of the survival of this little two-year-old boy whose parents were bound and slaughtered in front of his eyes by the Muslim terrorists, the Islamists, the radical Islamists, the words that are not allowed to be said. These subhumans slaughtered his parents in front of his eyes. Now, the news media is reporting that this little two-year-old boy was spared by these Muslim terrorists. But these quislings are wrong. Sources within India tell the Savage Nation that his young, innocent religious mother held him in her arms as she was slaughtered, and the child crawled out from beneath his dead mother with his dead mother's blood all over his clothing. This little child was found crying in the hallway when his Indian nanny, Sandra Samuel, opened the door from the room in which she was hiding and quickly grabbed the child and fled. He is 2 years of age. I have set up a fund for this child on michaelsavage.com. It does not go to me. I don't want the money. I want you to send money for this child's education and for his care. And the addresses of the little child's defense or his fund, I don't know what to call it, okay, is on michaelsavage.com. The fund for the surviving child of the slaughtered rabbi and his wife are to be found on michaelsavage.com. And we'll talk more about that today. But again, I want to go back to the miracle of this child's survival. Please do not believe the lies that the quisling vermin in the media are putting out, that these fanatic Muslim terrorists killed his parents and then spared him because they're so kind. Sources in India have told the Savage Nation that as his young, innocent religious mother was slaughtered, she held a child in her arms and she fell to the ground holding the child. That is why he was found with blood all over his clothing and why he was found alive. It was not because these vermin spared the child. The minute I heard about this child's survival, the story that came to my mind is the story of Moses himself in the reeds. I remember it from my childhood. The Pharaoh gave his order to all of his people, every boy that is born you must throw into the Nile River, but let every girl live. Now a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid the boy for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him, and she coated the basket with tar and pitch. Then she placed the little boy in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to the child. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her slave girl to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. The baby was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" "Yes, go," she answered, and the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter then said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." This child's name is Moses. This child in India has a name. I believe that there is a divine life ahead for him. I believe that while we mourn the loss of his parents, Rabbi Gavriel and Rivka Holzberg, slaughtered mercilessly by these Islamic subhumans, we must do everything we can to benefit their young children who remain and to rebuild the Chabad Center in Mumbai, which they had dedicated their lives to doing. And this goes beyond Jewish. This goes to all the listeners of this show, whether you be Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, atheist, it doesn't matter. Do something for this child.
Savage.
So, miracle in Bombay. Fund for the surviving child can be done online at michaelsavage.com. It goes directly to the people who are raising the money for him. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Again, michaelsavage.com is the website, and I'm going to read you the headlines on my website. Muslims refuse to bury terrorists. To me, that's a very positive sign that Indian Muslims themselves say they don't want the vermin killed in the attacks in Bombay to be buried in Muslim graveyards. To me, that's a very positive sign that mainstream Muslims have had enough of these fanatics. Fund for surviving child. Click here to donate online. Sale ends December 1. Buy now. Psychological nudity. Indian security chief resigns over attacks. Mumbai fears 5 terrorists are so-called missing. Mumbai terrorists were funded by cash raised in UK mosques. New York Times' politically correct coverage of Mumbai massacre. Photographer said cops would not fire guns as terrorists slaughtered civilians. That's a frightening article from the Belfast Telegraph. A photographer who was watching this scene unfold when it began in a railway station saw cops standing there with guns who were frozen. And the photographer ran up to the cops and said, "Use your weapons, shoot them, shoot them." But he said the cops didn't shoot back. They were so terrified. Dow loses 680 points. Luxury cruise ship outruns pirates. Again, pirates again. No one's killing the pirates. No one's sinking their ships. What's that all about? Global AIDS crisis overblown. Some dare to say so. That's even from the Associated Press. Here's a shocker. Pentagon to deploy 20,000 troops within the United States itself. That's the end of Posse Comitatus. 20,000 troops to be deployed within the United States itself. We'll save that for another day. Birmingham mayor arrested on federal charges. That's an interesting story. Wow. Muslim school plan draws protest. Plans for the Australian International Islamic College have raised the ire of residents who fear it will lead to the local Muslim population withdrawing from the rest of the community. Of course it will. They want apartheid. They don't like you. They think you're dirty and filthy. Bush says at the bottom of the website, an article from the AP, I'm sorry the economic crisis is occurring, says our great leader. Our great leader is quoted by ABC News as saying he was unprepared for war. You hear this? Do you hear this? Anyway, look, I have a great team on the radio and on the website. It's a small website. It's a little site that can. And I spent all weekend with them trying to collect the best stories we could find on the Bombay slaughter so that you know who did it, where they got their money, etc. And the articles are to be found on my website because I couldn't find them in the local newspapers. They're obsessed with, let us say, gay marriage. And that's about it. That's all they're writing about here in San Francisco. Homosexual marriage. Homosexual marriage and homosexual marriage. Homosexual marriage and homosexual marriage. Now, let's go back to the massacre in Bombay. Let us say you are an imam in one of these radical mosques. What examples do you use to show that the infidel is worthless? What examples do you use to frighten the would-be terrorist into killing for your version of Islam? What examples do you bring to these young fools to show them that the people they're killing are not even human, that the people they're killing have become like animals themselves? Well, I think you can pretty much fill in the blank. After all, this is a short answer to a question. It's not an essay exam. I think you could pretty much figure out the examples that the radical Islamists would use in their mosques to exemplify the fact that the society that they're going out to slaughter is a degenerate society. I think you could pretty much put two and two together without me saying another word. Okay? Now I'll go on to the callers the minute I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. If we have to be the only ones talking about who actually did the crime, we'll be the only ones talking about who did the crime and what we, the American people, think must be done. We'll cover it until we don't want to cover it, because there's no rule saying that we can't cover it. I refuse to cover World AIDS Day. I refuse to cover the shopping spree or Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton. I'm not interested in any of that. If others are interested, it's a free country and a very wide media landscape. They can cover it. But if I have any sense at all of America right now, I mean my particular audience, and I want to be very clear about this. My audience is a niche audience in America. This is not an audience, let us say, like Reader's Digest, where I'm aiming for the largest, broadest audience possible. I'm aiming for a certain spectrum of the American population. I pretty much know what it is that interests you, because what interests me interests you, or the show wouldn't be here these 15 years. And what interests me is what I will talk about. I'm obsessed with the killing in Bombay for many different reasons. I'm obsessed with it because of the fact that 10 men could get away with it. I'm obsessed that the government of India has done nothing. I'm obsessed that the government of Israel, which has failed the people completely, had the nerve to criticize the Indian commandos. I'm obsessed because we have no president in the America, not incoming or outgoing, who said anything of any merit whatsoever with regard to the Bombay massacre. So that's why I'm covering it. Okay, we the people have an obligation to protect ourselves. And I'm turning now to Louis and his crazed monkey and psychological nudity for two reasons. One, because I want to get off the topic for a minute. And two, because it's interesting that it opens with a story about the monkeys invading the capital of India. That's actually in my book, Louis and his crazed monkey. It says, I once read a story about monkeys invading the capital of India. just weeks before the deputy mayor died after falling off a balcony while fighting off a pack of monkeys. The story I read said that the animals were attacking again, with one woman seriously hurt and two dozen other people given first aid in the East Delhi neighborhood. So the monkeys are out of control, rogue monkeys running into residences. I guess if I go on with the story, I'll be accused of simophobia, and I'd be liable to face a boycott from some monkeys around the globe. And I can't afford that, because if the monkeys were to boycott my products, there'd be no conservatives left to buy them, I suppose. Liberalism turns all animals cute. A bear is cute. A monkey is cute. Monkeys are dangerous with big teeth. This reminds me of the story of Louis and his monkey. We go back now, ladies and gentlemen. Put on your resting caps. We're going back in time. We're going back to the Lower East Side of New York. Dad owns a small antique mart. Little old Michael is cleaning bronzes in the back, and there's Louis the drunk from the Bowery. He wasn't a bum. He worked, but he was an alcoholic. Dad would have him in on the weekends, and he'd clean the bronzes. And whatever else he did down there. I loved Louis. Louis was a great guy. You've got to understand, this guy was an alcoholic of the old school. Skinny like a rail, white guy, smoked unfiltered cigarettes, but one of the nicest guys on earth. He wore the rubber apron. He cleaned bronze statues with cyanide. Then, of course, I took over because Dad wanted cheap child labor. And who else? What other child was he going to get? As a result, I got to know Louis over the years. He taught me various things, and I talk about it, dinner and this. But I want to go back to the monkey. So Louis is this kind of a guy, interesting, but an alcoholic. Years go by. He lives alone in Williamsburg. In those days, Williamsburg was a slum. Zero, you know, oilcloth city. Leftover apartments from the last century. No one wanted to be there but the poor. So Louis lives there alone. He's very lonely. He gets a monkey. He wants a monkey. Now, nobody in those days had a monkey. Dogs, yes. Cats, yes. Who had a monkey in those days? Louis gets a monkey. Louis didn't just get a spider monkey, one of those skinny little monkeys. Louis got a woolly monkey. Now, woolly monkeys are really strong. They've got a chest on them and strong hands. Louis is in love with this monkey. For a couple of months, they're inseparable. Wherever Louis goes, there's the monkey. The monkey's on his shoulder while he's cleaning, and he's happy. Now, Louis was the kind of guy that if he went to a bar on the Lower East Side, he'd throw money in the jukebox. And he would whistle and sing and buy everyone drinks until he was broke. I remember the name of the bar to this day, Hamel and Corn. Whatever money he made from my father, he'd take it, and 2 minutes later, he'd be in the bar. Later, he'd stumble out in the street. If a car brushed him, he'd sleep on the Bowery and didn't care. He lived for the booze. That was it, but he had a heart of gold. So Louis has the woolly monkey. Finally, he has someone to fill his empty nights. As I said, they were inseparable. Well, as time went on, we got a call. Louis in the hospital. He's in critical condition. What? The monkey went crazy in his apartment. Attacked him. Almost ripped him to pieces. He suffered for 6 months in the hospital. I don't know which hospital. Probably Bellevue, because that's where they all wound up. The monkey went at him. You don't know what a monkey's like when it goes crazy. You try to stop an enraged monkey without a weapon? Impossible. He ripped Louis' neck. He ripped his face. He ripped his arms. He ripped his legs. He ripped his crotch. He ripped his behind. Louis was ripped up pretty badly, but we learned that during the fight, he grabbed his pet and threw it out the window. It just shows you that if he hadn't done it, he'd be dead today. A liberal probably would have tried to talk to the monkey, but Louis knew that the instincts had to kick in. It was him or the monkey. He decided that it was better him than the monkey. He didn't consult the liberal playbook on how to deal with a crazed monkey. He just fought it with it and killed it. I think that's what the bottom line in this story is. But the point is, even a lonely drunk needs companionship at night. In his case, he found it in the monkey. But it goes back to the story I open with, which is that monkeys are rampaging in India. Rogue monkeys are breaking into houses, even into the house of the daughter of the ruling Congress Party. They broke into the Indian Parliament. Trouble boiled over in late October when the city's deputy mayor fell to his death while driving away monkeys from his home. He waves a stick to scare them away, tumbles over the edge, and boom, he drops dead, falls off the balcony, and dies. So right now you can see that Louis was a pioneer in a way, in a sense that he understood that monkeys were dangerous long before they did in India, when they turned it into a sacred animal. That's the Louis and his monkey story in the Savage Nation. The bottom line is, don't get a monkey as a pet. They're wild animals. But I'm sure you can read something else into Louis and his crazed monkey. Just as in Guatemala, they can see the Messiah in a raindrop. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. That story and seven. The others, of course, are found in my great book, Psychological Nudity. Tens of thousands of you have received your copy already. And you can read this and all the other stories, including when pasta was spaghetti, one-armed Frank, They're wonderful stories to read around the holidays. Certainly more interesting than talking about sports. You can read them to your children. They're safe enough to even read to a grandparent. There are no dirty words in the book. No F words, no B words, no C words, no D words. Just English, ma'am. Just English.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, he had that background, but you know, we have an FBI, and we're not prejudiced against somebody who's worked at the FBI. It's got an honorable place to work, and the KGB, I think, was an honorable place to work, and it gave people in the former Soviet Union, a communist country, an opportunity to do something important and worthwhile.
So there's Ted Turner glorifying the KGB during the Soviet era, which, as you can understand, is why Jane Fonda lived with him for so long. Because I think only Jane Fonda could have put up with this lunatic. And this, of course, explains CNN to its essence, its formation. CNN was created by Ted Turner. Here's a man glorifying the KGB at its worst when it was under a Soviet domination. And so there he is now, actually exposing himself for what he is. Then we have the story of the criminal, in my opinion, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, writing checks, bailing out his friends, and nobody knows what he's doing with the money. Listen to clip 11.
We have implemented several programs aimed at improving the flow of credit to businesses and consumers so that they can spend and invest and restore our economy. Most significantly, we devoted $250 billion to increasing the capital of our banks. A stronger capital base enables banks to take losses as they write down or sell troubled assets. Stronger capitalization
is also... You know what you're full of? You're full of beans, Paulson. You should be in an orange jumpsuit. You have done more damage to our economy than Osama bin Laden, in my opinion. You have stolen more money from the people than all of our enemies put together in all of the wars. I've never seen anything like this. Here is a man who bailed out Citigroup after it went bankrupt, and they didn't even demand any collateral from the gangsters at Citigroup who ran it into the ground. Listen to clip 13.
The actions taken last week to support Citigroup demonstrate the creative combination of tools to most effectively strengthen our financial institutions.
Let's stop right there. Listen to the doublespeak of this lying SOB. The actions taken last week to support Citigroup demonstrate the creative combination of tools to most effectively strengthen our financial institutions? That's why the market went down 800 points today? The man is a disaster. He is destroying America's economy, whatever is left of it. And Bush, by the way, is behind it because Bush put him in office. Don't tell me that this man is saving the economy. He is not saving the economy. He is sacking the economy. And yet, apparently he can get away with it. As I say, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and a very small group of men have stolen or misused more money that is the taxpayers' property than all of the organized criminal acts of the entire last century combined. And it's been done in the last few months. And it's being done right before your eyes. The greatest criminal act in the history of the world is being conducted right before your eyes. Now, look, if he was saving the economy with these acts, I wouldn't have a hook to hang my coat on. But the fact is that no matter what billions they throw at their friends, the market goes down because people know he's doing everything wrong. Instead of lowering interest rates, him and Mr. Barbasol should be raising interest rates to encourage people to put money into banks and to save money. Don't you remember a few years ago, we've been told we have the lowest savings rate in the world, the Japanese save money, Americans spend money, and it's worrisome. Well, of course people spend money if they're encouraged to spend it because interest rates are so low that there's no encouragement to put money, no reason to put money in a bank. We need a very healthy spike in interest rates so that people start taking the money out of T-bills and putting them into banks. We don't need to get any more bailouts. The people can take the money that they're putting into T-bills and put them into banks if there was some more interest at stake here. That would encourage savings. It would also encourage a lot of healthy behavior. But you got to ask yourself why Paulson keeps bailing his friends out without any oversight and how he gets away with it. And why doesn't Obama's team say anything? Because Obama's team is the same as Bush's team. Don't you understand that yet? It's all about the investment bankers who bankrupted America, now going to be running America. You don't get any of this. That's why I've been talking about Bombay, because we're being bombed on many fronts at once by a group of bums. 1-800-449-8255. I have so many great callers that that I won't even get to them, truthfully. I'll go to San Diego. Alan, quickly go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, this is a thrill to be able to talk to you. And I swear, if you don't remind me of my Uncle Anthony that died a few years ago. You both have the same sense of humor and the same world outlook.
Well, fortunately, I haven't joined your uncle yet in the next world, but what's on your mind today?
Dr. Savage, what I really want to talk to you is about the way we're fighting terrorism on all fronts. I'm a Marine officer. I work at Pendleton. You know, I think I could talk about this with a little bit of competence. The people that we're fighting, the Muslim terrorists right now, they only respect force. They look at vacillation, weakness.
Right. Alan, aren't Marines trained to hunt and kill the enemy? Isn't that not what the training consists of?
Exactly, Doc Savage. And
right. Is a Marine not trained to hunt and kill the enemy?
Exactly.
Not to hunt and educate the enemy. Not to hunt and cook a meal for the enemy. A Marine is trained to hunt men and to kill those men or capture them. And yet you have leadership that refuses to unleash you on the enemy in the Waziristan and the other tribal regions. That's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Exactly. It's horrible. And I only dread what's going to happen with the upcoming BO administration. I'm certain the rules of engagement are going to get so much more restrictive than what we already have. They'll probably put a line.
I can't say what BO will do. Nobody knows. But the former commandant of Camp Pendleton, as you well know, is now the national security advisor. Do you know anything about him? I mean, he's a certifiably heroic guy, isn't he?
Somewhat. He's a good guy, he's all right. But
he's a former Marine. His father is a former Marine. He won the bronze star and silver stars in combat in Vietnam. At least we don't have another pencil head from Yale running the National Security Agency, or God forbid, a lawyer from one of Washington's lowest firms. I mean, we have a real Marine, and what does that tell you? Maybe Obama's going to be a lot tougher than we think.
It's giving me.
Let me send you a copy of Psychological Nudity for Christmas. That's all I can do right now. I'm almost out of time. 1-800-449-8255. Louis, New York. WOR, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Michael, yes. I'm your eyes here in the Northeast. I just heard a report confirmed on CNN that American intelligence told India two times, not just once, Michael, but two times that...
Well, if it's CNN and the CIA, I don't believe a word of it.
I know, yeah.
Why should we believe CNN, number one? And number two, do you actually believe the CIA is that competent?
You know, Michael, I think about this army. I liken it to a football play where somebody throws a pick at us. I mean, we're going for the football. We're going for the touchdown. We're going to get these terrorists, but somebody gets in our way all the time. And, Michael, I wonder, for the love of me, who is that person or persons? Thank you very much, Michael.
What do you mean, within the government who doesn't unleash the military on the tribal areas?
Exactly. We have the best.
I don't know. I don't have the answer. I would think it's Mr. Peepers himself.
I would think
it's Mr. Peepers himself. That's all. Sacramento, Jessica, go ahead quickly on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I'm a 21-year-old. I've been listening to you since I was 18, and I'm so fed up with my generation. It's like we're stuck in this this, what is it called, like the psychiatric hierarchy pyramid, where at the bottom it's, you know, food, shelter, and comfort, and the bottom, you know, the expansion of the mind and self-fulfillment. But we're so stuck up at the top into self-fulfillment that we can't even protect ourselves. I mean, if you look at all the eating disorders going around in the world.
Now, you mean the government can't protect us and that's their only job, is what you're saying? No, they can't protect you, and they won't protect you. They're interested only in robbing the treasury, as far as I can tell. Here's the governor of the state of California saying that we're bankrupt and he needs to raise taxes. Instead of saying we're going to crack down, we're going to save $15 billion this year alone by putting a CHP officer in every emergency room. And unless you have a driver's license that is valid, which shows you're a California resident, if he won't do that, who will do that? So Schwarzenegger, in other words, has abdicated his responsibility as a governor. Let me send you a copy of Psychological Nudity because you're so worried. I'll give you something to enjoy yourself with. You can read it over the roaring fire for the holidays. Well, look, I'm going to take a break in a minute. We're going to go to some great interviews that I did a little early. Then I'll come back with you a little later on the show. But I want to say this. I was unable to sleep over the last three or four nights. I was awakening every night at 2 a.m. in a sweat, imagining the last moments of the people as they were machine gunned or grenaded. Many of them were tortured. I don't think you know this. It's being hidden by CNN and the other outlets. They were tortured by these Islamic extremists. Tortured, 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 my friends. Savage. Well, you all know that I'm Michael Savage and I'm an independent conservative. And sometimes being an independent means I take positions that your traditional lockstep Republicans would shy away from. Well, one of those places is the environment. Just because you own a barbecue, snowmobile, or wood stove does not mean you have the right to fill my lungs with your noxious fumes. I'm entitled to clean air. I was very interested to learn that in my area, the Bay Area Quality Management District not only monitors the pollution in the air, but tracks down the people who abuse or completely disregard any wood-burning ban in place. Our next guest is Lisa Fasano, who is the communications director with the Bay Area Quality Management District. Lisa Fasano, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
What exactly does your group do?
Well, the Bay Area Air District actually oversees the air quality regulations and implements those regulations in the Bay Area, the 9-county Bay Area region. So we are the ones who permit emission sources such as refineries and manufacturing facilities, large dry cleaner facilities. And then we also follow up on those permits and police, if you will, to make sure that those businesses and industries that are emitting pollution are not emitting more than is allowable by law or in their permit.
Well, how is this monitoring done?
We have a series of air quality monitors throughout the Bay Area that monitor two types of pollution. Ozone or smog pollution in summertime is our main pollutant, and in the wintertime our main pollutant is particulate matter. It's known as PM2.5, and those are very, very fine particles that are in the air and actually, if you breathe them, can lodge deeply into the lungs and even pass through into the bloodstream.
It seems to me that wood smoke is a big part of the problem.
Well, wood smoke in the Bay Area is actually 1/3 or 33% of our winter particulate matter pollution. But there's other sources as well, like diesel exhaust, road dust, which is small bits of materials getting ground up on roadways and kicked up as people travel. And all of these things create the wintertime particulate matter pollution, which is, again, a different pollutant for us. And actually, particulate pollution is a very serious health concern. As I said, it lodges deeply into the lungs, can pass through into the bloodstream, and it really exacerbates respiratory conditions. People who have asthma, even mild asthma, can feel when there's heavy particulate matter in the air. Folks who have emphysema or bronchitis or other respiratory ailments really feel the effects of heavy particulate matter in the air. And in fact, even the general public who is healthy and might not have any respiratory conditions can still feel the effects of heavy particle pollution in the air, like we experienced this past summer with the Northern California wildfires and the heavy smoke that was over the Bay Area. People were coming out and saying that their eyes were watery and red, their throat was dry and scratchy, they were coughing a lot. And those are all effects of particulate pollution or particle pollution that's in the air that affects all of us.
when there is a ban, how well does the public follow it?
We're finding, by and large, that most people throughout the Bay Area are actually observing the ban, and they recognize that wood smoke does create health problems and does create a certain amount of air pollution. We've actually had a door-to-door campaign where we've been knocking on doors in communities throughout the Bay Area, and I would say, by and large, 95% to 99% of the households that we've talked to about the wood smoke rule and the fact that we are asking people to not burn. It's now illegal to burn. When we call a winter spare the air alert, most of the households are very receptive to that and recognize that wood smoke is just one more air pollutant that we need to pay attention to and we need to limit from our air quality.
Well, how are these bans enforced?
Well, we have teams of air quality inspectors that are out throughout the day and into the evening. Our air quality inspectors are actually out every day, actually observing the air pollution situation from all of our permitted facilities. And so this is just one more of the things that they are out there regulating and policing. But we do have teams of inspectors in the field who will be looking for wood smoke, if they can smell it in the air, if they can see it coming from people's chimneys, and they will make note of the address, observe for the required period of time, take an observation of conditions at the time, and then write up a report that could be turned into a warning letter or a violation.
On average, how many bans are there a year?
On average, we experience about 20 days a winter season where we need to ask people to not burn in their fireplaces. Now, that fluctuates. Last year, we only called 7 days. And the year previous to that, we called 20. But over the past 10 years, we've noticed that it's about 20 days out of the winter season that air quality conditions are such that we need to call for a burn ban and require that there's no burning in household fireplaces.
What conditions create the most need for a ban? Is it pollution, stagnant air, or something else?
Well, actually, it's all dependent on the weather. Weather conditions dictate whether or not we will call a winter spare the air alert. When we have cool temperatures and light or no winds, it really produces sort of this cap or an inversion layer on the Bay Area that holds all the pollutant in. And when we have a lot of wood burning or we have a lot of road dust that's being kicked up, that particulate matter kind of just sits in the air, sits in our breathing zone, and makes it very difficult for people to breathe, especially those with compromised respiratory conditions. So it's those conditions that we're looking for in the weather patterns. When we have higher temperatures or we have more winds or even if we have nice rainy days, it's those conditions that actually mix the air up and kind of blow it out or mix the pollutants around so that they don't build up in our atmosphere.
Lisa Fasano, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. We appreciate you having you on, and we want to remind everyone to check before they burn by calling 1-877-4-NO-BURN or checking sparetheair.org to see what the burn conditions are for the day.
Savage.
The fall of the big American auto industry has caught some people off guard. I've been saying for a long time now that the industry itself needs to make changes if it's going to survive in today's markets. Joining us today is Paul Mulshine, who says this calamity was entirely predictable. Paul, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, good to talk to you again.
You say you clearly saw this coming.
Well, you know, it's funny. It goes back to when I was in college. I used to work in the Ford plant making Pintos, you know, and I got I have some real personal expertise here because the guys who made the cars, actually, we really worked our butts off. You know, it's a very hard job and, you know, you got good pay, but it's not the workers' fault. I mean, especially when you get down there, they had this thing, the pit, and you're down there getting up at the car, you know, working up at the cars and you keep getting hit in the head by the differential, you know. A lot of real tough jobs there. And it wasn't the fault of the workers. I mean, look back then, right? We're building Pintos. Well, you know, Pinto was a pretty crummy car. I mean, Volkswagen at the time was beginning the Rabbit, which became the prototype for small compacts, front-wheel drive compacts. Volvo was already making a good, solid, mid-sized four-door that was reliable and so forth. You know, and here was Detroit trying to get by with the Pinto, and then their bigger cars were even showed even worse engineering. And they've always been trying to get by with cheap engineering and just a lot of advertising. And so that in itself was fairly inevitable.
Well, what about the argument that the deck is stacked against the American auto companies?
Well, you know, back then they had all the advantages. When you compared them to Toyota and Honda, remember this was maybe 74, 75 when I worked at the Ford plant. The Toyotas and Hondas that were coming out then were pretty dreadful. People didn't really, Toyota was a synonym for, you know, crummy little car. And other than a couple decent cars they started to come out with, there was a Datsun, as they used to call it back then, that was pretty nice. You really had some miserable cars. And at that time, if you had said, you know, 35 years from now, these guys are going to run Detroit out of the business, people would have thought you were crazy. You know, so you really have to say, it's not that they didn't have the advantages, they just didn't exploit the advantages.
They brought a lot of these regulations on themselves?
Well, here's the funny thing. They have what they call the light truck loophole. I mean, what they basically did about 15 years ago, actually it began in the late 70s with Iacocca. He decided that he couldn't compete, Dodge Chrysler couldn't compete with cars, so they would start selling trucks and disguised as cars. And they began with the SUVs and so forth, the minivans. And at first, it was a relatively minor phenomenon. But what they eventually did was decide that, you know, we'll take a pickup truck, we'll throw a couple captain's chairs in there, we'll throw in a good stereo system and a climate control system, and all of a sudden your $15,000 pickup truck is a $40,000 SUV. And they were making huge profits on these things. And they took that as their means of beating the Japanese. But the problem was, it was just a matter of them going to Washington and lobbying to build up this loophole in such a way that the Japanese, that cars couldn't compete with what they called trucks, you know, SUVs. Those big cars in the 60s, you know, the Cadillacs and Pontiac Bonnevilles and so forth that everybody used to like, are really illegal now. I mean, we're in this crazy situation where a big car is illegal, but a Hummer is legal. You know, not only is a Hummer legal, I mean, you can't have really a big car would get a gas guzzler tax or just be totally outlawed, but a Hummer has no regulations whatsoever. And that was crazy, and Detroit really brought that upon themselves. And, for example, I always ask people this question: is the PT Cruiser a car or a truck? And almost anybody would say, well, it's a car. Well, it's not, because what they did was they got these regulations pushed through so it met the light truck definition, which means that category is exempt from the fuel economy requirements and so forth. And let me read you some of these things, because this is a light truck. Here's the actual regulation. A light truck is an automobile other than a passenger automobile, which is either designed for off-highway operation as described in paragraph B of this section, or designed to perform at least one of the following functions: 1, transport more than 10 persons; 2, provide temporary living quarters; 3, transport property on open bed; 4, provide greater cargo carrying capacity than passenger carrying volume; or, and then it goes on and on and on and on. So this is what they did. They created this for themselves, and they then tried to use that regulation to beat the Japanese and the Europeans, while the Japanese and the Europeans were concentrating on building the cars people actually want to buy.
Why did they give up on the passenger car market and let the Japanese companies take it over?
Well, the profits aren't as big in that market, and they decided that they had a really quick profit machine here with basically glorified pickup trucks. And so they put all their resources into that. It was easier to do that than to compete. And as you know, around the mid-80s, you started to see Honda and Toyota all of a sudden, instead of being the crummy cars that everybody laughed at, those became the gold standard of cars. You know, the Honda Accord, the Toyota Camry, are what basically anybody who just wants good, solid transportation buys. You know, they never break, they're fast, they handle, they get good fuel economy, and Detroit just isn't competing and hasn't competed in that area. I mean, I've got an old Honda Accord I bought in 98. It's 10 years old, got 120,000 miles on it, still runs great. You don't get that. You know, you get a 10-year-old American car, by the time it's got 120,000 miles on it, it's all beat up. And that's really, you know, that they just decided they couldn't compete there. And that was really a dumb decision on their part. And it was the people in Congress basically went along with it for two reasons. One, the Democrats were in the thrall of the United Auto Workers. They would do anything for the UAW, and the UAW wanted to avoid the foreign competition and therefore wanted to see these loopholes extended. And then, of course, the Republicans, the companies just bought the Republicans wholesale. So you really got this rigged market. And the problem with rigged markets is they always come upon, you know, sooner or later, they come unrigged. And that's what happened recently with these guys. It's funny, and, you know, the president of GM, Rick Wagoner, was quoted recently in the New York Times as saying, "We, like everybody else, didn't anticipate fuel prices to go up like they did." Now, you know, anyone who looks at a graph of fuel prices over the last four decades, it looks like the Rocky Mountains. It's up and down, it's up and down. And it's down again now, but, you know, it was up, it was spiked a couple months ago. It was very obvious it was going to spike at some point, and they just ignored it.
Do you feel there has to be a bailout of these companies? I don't.
Well, I think you're going to see a bailout because the loss would mean essentially going out of business totally. They're really in a position now where they would just, if left to their own devices, I don't think even a bankruptcy would save them. But I think you hear Barney Frank and the Democrats arguing that we have to bail them out in such a way that the union doesn't have to make any concessions. Well, they do have to make concessions. They're getting paid 50% more than people who work in the American plants of Toyota and Honda. And so the really, you know, I think even the Democrats are going to insist that there have to be some concessions there. And it's a very tough road out, though, because their models aren't very good. It takes them a long time to come online, and they're extremely ill-suited for the future. They lost both the plants. The plant I used to work in closed a couple of years ago, and the other plant in Jersey, Ford had another plant in Jersey that closed. GM had a plant in Jersey that closed. These all could have been functional plants if the management had been putting out good vehicles. But you can't, you know, Congress isn't going to accept Detroit disappearing. I mean, Michigan has an awful enough economy, God knows, as it is. You know, so you're going to see some sort of restructuring.
Do you think these companies will be turned around, or are we going to be back where we are in a few years?
Well, it's funny. I think a lot of it, at least in the GM perspective, I think what you're going to see is some sort of emphasis on this, the GM Volt, which is a plug-in hybrid. And it's interesting technology. A lot of people, I just got off the phone with a geophysicist who doesn't believe in the whole theory of global warming, you know, and he actually argues that we're going to be going into an ice age. But he says, even if you disbelieve the global warming hype, the idea of going to plug-in hybrids is very attractive because both parties, I mean, you probably heard, you know, in the last campaign, both parties are up there, McCain and Obama are both saying, we're going to end dependence on foreign oil. Well, you're not going to end dependence on foreign oil when you're importing 13 million barrels a day at the moment and using 9 million barrels a day in automobiles. So the only significant way to do that, really, is to get these plug-in hybrids. And this would be a car you plug in overnight, and your first 40 miles or so you run off the battery, and the motor only kicks in when the battery draws down. The technology is feasible. It would be very useful in cities and so forth, you know, San Francisco, L.A., and so forth. And it could work, unlike all these pie-in-the-sky fuel cell things and all that, you know. So I think you'll probably see some move in that direction. And, you know, that would be a good technological fix. And let's face it, we really need to do something. I mean, I agree with the candidates. You know, the amount of oil we import is killing us, no matter, even when the prices drop now. I think we were sending $1 billion a day was going out to foreign countries for oil. And now it's $500,000 a day going out. And, you know, that's money that would be better spent here. So something like a plug-in hybrid is a good way to keep it here.
Paul Mollschein, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks a lot. It was great talking to you, and I hope to hear from you again soon.
Savage.
It is the Savage Express. Every night at this time, we go into the Savage Express. When I call you, please keep it to 1 minute or less. Make your statement. Let's move on. Also, anybody who gets on the line in this part of the hour will get a free copy of Psychological Nudity all week this week. Let's begin at KNEW, San Francisco. Jacob, you're up in the Savage Nation. Fire away.
Yes, Michael, I think Israel has to focus on the two-year-old in India. The tragedy of that two-year-old is what they ought to focus on, and you shouldn't criticize, you know, the response of India to the terrorist attack. And American Jews should buy Cadillacs. They shouldn't buy BMWs. They shouldn't buy Lexus. They shouldn't buy Mercedes. Buy American.
Well, that's quite a statement. I cannot comment on any of it, but thank you for all of the... I mean, that's what it's about. It's about opinion. We went from Cadillacs to... Wow, that was a heck of a... I couldn't keep up with it. Well, all right. We'll just let it go. There's not much I could say. 1-800-449-8255. Waco, Texas. Derek, go ahead. Fire away. You're on Savage Express.
Just prior to 9/11, Pakistani's ISI General Mahmoud Ahmed, as reported in the Indian newspaper following 9/11, wire transferred $100,000 to Muhammad Atta. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, who ran the operation as a lead officer called Able Danger, claimed that only 10% of the information that he submitted to the investigators of 9/11 was actually received and reflected upon, and therefore the network that was terrorist that Anthony Schaefer exposed was covered up. 9/11 was to get us in the Middle East. This event that happened in Mumbai is to get us in the Middle East even more. It's time to stop the madness. It's time to come home.
Interesting. So you think it's all a conspiracy, an international conspiracy, that they let it happen in order to drag us into another hot spot?
Well, it's interesting that over 500 engineers and architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, so Michael, but I have my doubts, and I have good reason to have my doubts.
I don't believe that at all. I think that it's a crackpot group. If you want to just go back to 9/11, the fact of the matter is I've seen blame laid back in the at the time of the event, shortly thereafter of 9/11, that is, that the World Trade Center towers were built with steel girders that were not sprayed with asbestos because of the environmental whack jobs. And as a result, that's why the steel melted so rapidly. That if the steel had been wrapped with asbestos, as had been done in previous times, although the jets certainly would have caused grave damage, the building's structure would not have melted down. So I don't believe a word of this conspiracy stuff. I mean, I know it exists, it continues to exist, but I don't buy it at all, and I certainly don't accept that it was a conspiracy in Bombay. One thing we do know is that we won't be hearing that like the anti-Semites said, that the Israelis all left the World Trade Center before 9/11, which is one lie. And now they can't say that the Israelis left Bombay before the attack and blame the Jews again, although I'm sure they're trying to figure this one out, how to blame the Jews for this one. Pennsylvania, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'd just like to talk to you about what I feel is the fundamental instability in the Islamic religion with you. It is, to my knowledge, it is the only major monotheistic religion that gives its war powers to the individual believer without any check or balance whatsoever. What do you think about that? I think that the religion, I hate saying it.
Well, look, let's start with what came out today, that the Muslims of India are refusing to permit the burial of the Muslim terrorists in Muslim graveyards. I think that's a positive sign, don't you?
It's an incredibly positive sign.
Maybe the general population of Muslims are fed up with these throwbacks, are sick of the mullahs who poison the minds of some of these deluded individuals, and they're starting to step out and say, no, we're not even going to bury them in our cemeteries. That was a positive sign. To me, that's a miracle to see that at least one Muslim group in India has come out against the terrorism to such an extent that they say they don't even want these terrorists to be buried in a Muslim cemetery. I'd like to see that happen here in America. Then I'd know we're on the road to recovery. Thank you. Send the man a copy of Psychological Nudity. This is the Savage Express, 1-800-449-8255. is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com has all of the articles that I have talked about on the show. Well, I don't know. We can go any way you want. Let us go to, which one did I want to go to? Pennsylvania Julie comes back. Rochester, New York. Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, I feel like one of the reasons that we can't go after these Muslims up in Waziristan and elsewhere around the world is the position that we've got ourselves in with Russia, foreign policy-wise. The only major counterforce to the West right now is Russia and China, and obviously they would back the Muslims in any skirmish that we get ourselves into, so we've essentially deballed ourselves with our position with Russia.
Well, that's very interesting. Yes, of course, Waziristan, the last I checked, I don't have the map in front of me, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but when I looked at the map earlier, this region that we are talking about, before I say another word, I want to get it correct. If I'm not mistaken, it does border on Russia. Here it is. Here's the map of Waziristan. This area borders Afghanistan. No, Russia's not right here. We're talking about Waziristan, the self-declared part of FATA, the federally administered tribal areas. You're talking about Afghanistan, China to the north, and India to the east. So I don't see where Russia has anything to do with Waziristan.
Well, I'm saying they would back them against us as a counterinsurgency because, as right now, the Russians and the Chinese are the only counterforce to the West in our position. And if you look at Obama...
Well, I'm not so sure if that's true, but if it is true, you can thank George Bush's bungling for that because George Bush and Condoleezza Rice greatly overstepped their boundaries by causing that puppet of theirs to attack Russia, as you well know. George Bush provoked Russia into this act in Georgia. That's my opinion. Don't you agree with me?
I agree. He continued right where Clinton left off in the bungling.
All right, let me send you a copy of Psychological Nudity. We agree on that. I don't know that Russia would back the terrorists because they've had their own problems with terrorists. Of course, they're from a wholly different area in another region called Chechnya, which has nothing to do with this. However, I will remind you, those of you who are listening to the show, that when Russia had a school in Beslan taken over by Islamic militants, they gassed the entire assembly, killing many of the hostages themselves, and then they went in and executed the Islamic terrorists. They shot the women right between the eyes. I've seen the video of the dead Muslim women in their burqas. They didn't bring them back to justice. They didn't bring them back to a trial. You see, there is no ACLU in Russia. We are blessed with those vermin.
Savage.